WILL Illinois Newsroom. This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Friday, January 28th. Coming up, while the pandemic has been hard on all of us, no one has taken on more of a burden than frontline healthcare workers. We'll hear from a nurse about how that's taken a toll coming up in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Illinois Democratic U.S. Senator Dick Durbin is reacting to the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer. Breyer's leaving the bench after nearly 30 years. President Joe Biden says he intends to nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court, a pledge he had made during his campaign. Durbin chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is in charge of vetting Biden's nomination. Durbin says he supports Biden's pledge.
We're in the process. No one's been chosen yet. So it's a little early to predict the timetable for this hearing.
President Biden is expected to make a nomination by the end of February. A recent study finds that the teacher shortage in Illinois school districts has worsened. Illinois Newsroom student journalist Luis Velasquez has more.
A study by the Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools finds that 88% of schools say they have a teacher shortage. 77% report the problem is getting worse. And more than 90% of Illinois districts expect it to get worse for the next 2 years. Champaign and Ford County Regional Superintendent Gary Lewis says Champaign school districts are facing teacher shortages. Lewis says a complaint he hears from teachers is not having enough time to improve their skills due to the shortage.
A lot of districts can't allow them to leave to go get professional development because they don't have anyone to cover for them. So that's going to have a long-term effect that our teachers don't continue to get better.
The survey also says 96% of schools report a shortage of substitute teachers. I'm Luis Velasquez, Illinois Newsroom.
Illinois lawmakers hold a hearing later today to talk about operational and financial problems at the state's Department of Children and Family Services. Governor J.B. Pritzker says he's disappointed the problems with finding homes persist. In some cases, kids need to be placed out of state, but he hinted that solutions are in the works.
If you don't have one in the state of Illinois, we've got to find them a place. I don't want that to occur, and so we're making proposals, in fact, this year to make investments that I think will help us to keep those kids in the state and provide more beds.
Problems at DCFS were recently magnified when Director Mark Smith was held in contempt of court for months-long delays in placing several children in proper settings. State Representative Camille Lilly, who's chairing today's hearing, called on members to act in a, quote, serious bipartisan fashion. Public health officials reported more than 200 new COVID-19 cases yesterday. The number of active cases in Champaign County has fallen to about 1,250, the lowest number since early December. Two more Champaign County residents have died of COVID-19. Officials say they're a man in his 70s and another in his 80s. That puts the total number of deaths from COVID in Champaign County at 259. Health officials say a woman in her 40s is the latest to die from COVID-19 in Macon County. That puts their death toll at 303. Officials reported 260 new cases in Macon County yesterday. 72 county residents are hospitalized with COVID-19. 45 of them are unvaccinated. Still to come, a nurse in Bloomington Normal tells us about the toll that the pandemic has taken as we approach 2 years of fighting COVID-19. Her conversation with Sarah Nardi is next on 217 Today.
This is Erica Scalise, and I'm the engagement producer at The 21st Show. What issues happening in Illinois matter most to you? Join The 21st Texting Club and add to our weekly conversation. To subscribe to the group, text the word TALK to 217-803-0730. That's 217-803-0730. See you there.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. After nearly 2 years, we're all tired of the pandemic. Tired of mitigations, mask wearing, and fighting about all of it. But perhaps no one is more tired than frontline healthcare workers, who've been fighting the virus since March of 2020. And they continue to battle the surge in cases and hospitalizations from the Omicron variant. As one nurse tells Sarah Nardi, that battle takes a toll.
Haley Aishelman is a primary charge nurse in the critical care unit at OSF Medical Center in Bloomington. She says it may be true that Omicron causes milder symptoms for most people,
but that's not true for everyone. And so the vulnerable populations of people are still getting very sick with this variant, and some of them are still dying.
Deanna Frauci is among that vulnerable population. For the past year, Frauci has been undergoing chemotherapy for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's left her with a severely compromised immune system. Frauci says, yes, Omicron is everywhere and seemingly mild.
But when it hit me, because of that compromised immune system, I just went way down and my white blood cells were basically gone.
Frauci says once she contracted COVID, her condition deteriorated quickly. If her husband hadn't taken her to the ER when he did, Frauci says she doesn't think she would have made it. Others haven't been so fortunate. So far, in January alone, 20 McLean County residents have died of COVID. The county's death toll since the start of the pandemic stands at 326. That's 326 bedsides attended round the clock by frontline medical workers like Haley Aishelman. And Aishelman says each of those losses takes a toll.
You know, we have these intimate moments with these patients, and so it is really hard on you emotionally when you've given everything that you feel like you possibly can for these people that have been here for months, and then you end up losing them.
COVID patients spend a long time in the hospital. The average stay is 40 days. And because of infectious disease protocols, much of that time can be spent in isolation, meaning patients can't see visitors from the outside world. Hospital staff becomes the patient's lifeline. And Aishelman says it's not uncommon for intense bonds to form.
Some of these patients have been in our ICU for 30, 40 days, so they become somewhat of our family while we're here at work.
Frauci spent a relatively brief 11 days in ICU at Carl Broman. She says aside from FaceTime calls, hospital staff was her only human contact. Frauci says she's in awe of the way staff was willing to connect with her, to make that personal investment while knowing that she might not survive.
Why? How do they do this? Why do they do it, and how can they do it every day with a variety of people that are in there, knowing that some won't be as fortunate as me to go out that front door? They're going out a different way.
Aishelman says while the connections that she and her fellow nurses form with patients do develop entirely within the context of treatment, those connections they form are real.
I mean, we didn't know them outside of here, but we grew to know them through stories that their families will tell us, or encounters that we had with them when maybe they first came in and were able to talk with us.
In COVID wards, nurses can function almost like proxy family members, providing familiarity and comfort for patients isolated from their loved ones. Aishelman says nurses try to make care personal, like playing a patient's favorite music, even as that patient lays intubated and unconscious.
Their family, so that was really important to them. So while they were in their medically induced coma, you know, we just kind of jammed out with them.
Frauci says while she's grateful for all the medical treatment she received while in the ICU, that's not the only thing she credits for getting her through.
For me, it's always about the human contact. You know, if I can't connect that way, I have a more difficult time.
For many of Aishelman's patients, much of that human contact centers around prayer. She says if nurses know that prayer is an important part of the patient's life, they'll gather in the room to pray. Prayer is also where nurses often turn when patients die, Aishelman says, and they sometimes gather with hospital staff around a bedside to remember and to grieve.
Our pastoral care here is really great, and they'll come and, you know, pray with us and pray over the patients.
Aishelman says when a patient dies, she and the other nurses send cards to the family, offering remembrances of their loved one. It's a small gesture, she says, but one that families seem to appreciate. It helps bring some closure for Aishelman and her coworkers, too. But then the process begins again. Another patient, another relationship, another loss to grieve. For nearly 2 years now, that has been the daily reality of Aishelman and frontline medical workers everywhere.
It is really emotionally exhausting, but it's what we're here for, you know, and we're here still here for our patients, and we'll still give them everything that we can.
And as for what the community can give to the people who care for them, Aishelman says, get vaccinated, get boosted, and be a partner to healthcare workers who are fighting this virus every day. I'm Sarah Nardi.
And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says we'll see mostly cloudy skies today with a chance of flurries and a high of 25 degrees. That's all for today. 217 Today is produced by Farah Anderson. Reporting today contributed by Hannah Ferris, Luis Velasquez, Alex Degman, and Sarah Nardi. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moline. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a good weekend.